Putting officer, it's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
As I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week are Hannah Rodger, chief reporter of the Sunday Mail, and Scottish Daily Express editor Ben Borland. So Holyrood is in recess for a couple of months, which means that Parliament is not sitting, but Scottish politics never sleeps. It's never dull, and there's plenty going on. There's also been a lot of activity near Holyrood this week, given that the King is in town for post-coronation celebrations. He was in Edinburgh with the Queen in order to be presented with the nation's crown jewels. Now, I don't want to focus too much on that event. It went according to plan and these things happened. But I am interested in discussing with my guests the role of the monarchy in 21st century Scotland and whether it still has a place. So just starting with you, Ben, obviously the Scottish Daily Express is a big supporter of the institution of monarchy. Do you think that Prince Charles is sort of leading an institution that is in rude health north of the border, or do you think there are maybe signs of concern for him?
I don't think there are any signs of concern in Scotland particularly. I think he's probably exceeded expectations in his early months on the throne. Obviously, the late Queen passed away in Balmoral last September, and I think the outpouring of emotion and just the incredible scenes we witnessed in the following days showed how much affection and, you know, what esteem both the late Queen Elizabeth and the royal family and the institution of the monarchy are held in Scotland. You know, when push comes to shove, the whole country turned out to pay tribute. I think Charles has got off to a good start. Certainly, yesterday's events were on a much less lavish scale than the coronation itself. So perhaps, you know, if there were some concerns about the amount that was spent during a cost of living crisis, I don't think you could really levy that criticism at the Scottish events this week. But even so, they've been very well supported. I think there's been a healthy protest. There's also been people who've made it very clear that they are fully in support of the monarchy. The Not My King signs that we see here, you know, the bright yellow, they're very, very eye-catching, but they were very much a minority on the Royal Mile.
When you talk about the popularity of the monarchy, though, is that not because of the late Queen rather than the institution itself?
I think the two go hand in hand. I think, as I say, I think Charles has started very well. I think we all know where he stands. We all know where he stands on the environment, and we all know where he stands on these kind of issues. I think a few people made the point that the Greens were protesting at the foot of the Royal Mile, whereas in actual fact, King Charles has achieved far more for the environment than the Scottish Greens. I mean, by just a considerable distance. He's very much a green king, I think, as the record called him today.
Just to bring you in, Hannah, I mean, there are problems for the monarchy. You look at the tensions with Prince Harry and Meghan, and then you've got Andrew and some of his questionable decisions. And, of course, it is a hereditary institution which will inevitably jar with quite a lot of people. I mean, how would you assess the state of the institution in 2023?
Well, I was looking at some polling to do with, you know, favourability of the monarchy in Scotland, and certainly you can see quite clearly that support for the monarchy has fallen. Not hugely, but there has been a fall. I think it was around 50% of people kind of were broadly supportive of the monarchy before the Queen died. And then after that, I think it's gone down to about 46% or something like that. So, you know, I think the Queen was sort of one of a kind, not just because she's the Queen, but, you know, she was there for so long. She was kind of just a known figure. And I hate to use the phrase sort of national treasure, but in the case of the Queen, she was. Whereas I think with Charles, people don't really relate to him as much. You know, so I think that maybe explains some of the polling and the sort of just people's lack of connection to him. But certainly, you know, I do think as well in Scotland, we do have that. The royal family, it doesn't seem as close to us as maybe some people in, for example, London or the south of England, certainly. Even though there are, you know, royal residences and things up here, but even so during the coronation, the number of sort of street parties and things that were planned down south compared to the number of applications that had gone in Scotland, it was really, really low. So I don't know. I mean, I just think we've got a different relationship with the monarchy than, you know, than other, well, than England, I guess. I'm not entirely sure how Wales and Northern Ireland view it, but certainly in Scotland, it's quite different.
Do you not think that, Hannah, sticking with you, do you not think the concept of a hereditary monarch, hereditary head of state, it just looks a bit weird in 2023?
I mean, if we're going to go down that route, there's a lot of things that look kind of weird in 2023, but, you know, it's just them's the breaks. That's the way it is. I do think one thing that looks weird is the fact that Lorna Slater seemed, correct me if I'm wrong, but she seemed quite keen to attend the actual coronation. No?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe a foot in both camps.
Well, do you know what, do you know what I mean, though? I mean, why is she attending that but then protesting against it? It's just a bit, doesn't really sit right with me, whereas at least, you know, Patrick Harvey, you know where he stands on it. He's always been very anti-monarchy, but from, you know, from conversations that I've had with some people who shall not be named, she was very enthusiastic about attending the coronation. So yeah, we'll leave it at that.
And Ben, just to pick up with you, you know, supporters of monarchy always say that it's a politically impartial institution, that they don't get involved in party politics, and they're essentially above the fray. But as you were saying, Prince Charles is known for his commitment to environmentalism, to multi-faith initiatives, to helping minority ethnic communities. Is there a bit more scope for him to dabble in politics than his late mum?
I think so. I think obviously it's politically neutral. I think what he mustn't do is try and interfere with, you know, the lawmaking process at Parliament, at the UK Parliament or the Scottish Parliament. But the Queen was famous for never expressing a view on things. She was the ultimate fence sitter. I think maybe we can all accept that Charles, it would be crazy after so many decades where we all know his view on things, for him suddenly to try and hide that view. So I think if he's expressing a view on the things that he cares passionately about, I think we can live with that.
Isn't there a double standard there, though? I mean, Prince Harry is committed to environmentalism. He's shown a commitment to climate change-related issues. He gets hammered for it, but folk are relaxed about his dad doing it.
I think the thing with Harry is that both he and his wife say they're committed to environmental issues, but seem very, very keen on private jet travel.
Charles travels by plane as well, though, doesn't he?
Usually Royal Train, up and down.
He goes abroad. So
then he's the head of state, you know. Harry has left the royal family or he's left frontline royal duties. I mean, I don't know. I don't really. I think the monarchy itself, and just to go back to a point Hannah made, obviously we've been covering these stories for years and years and years, and the street parties issue goes back as long as I've been a reporter in Scotland, right back to the Queen, back to the the Diamond Jubilee. There's never been that kind of street party enthusiasm. So I don't think the fact that there weren't many street parties at the coronation shows that Charles is any less popular than his mother. There's never been a lot of street parties, even absolute height. I think it's just a different way that a different relationship. Scotland's a bit more relaxed. It's a bit more
hands off
monarchy.
I think that's what I meant. You know, I'm not saying deliberately people were not supporting the king's coronation, but you know, I do think like in Scotland we don't tend to do these street party things for anything, really. We just all choose to go down the pub.
I have to say, we had one on our street for the Platinum Jubilee last summer. Everyone dragged the barbecues out onto the front lawn. Even a few guys, you know, Celtic fans on the street, they were sort of joining in with a kind of wry smile, and everyone seemed to just enjoy it, you know. And I think this is it. You've just got to bump along together. Someone brought an instrument out and played Rule Britannia, and a few people booed and a few others applauded. You know, this is 20. We've all just got to get along together. And I think, you know, if we're just discussing the institution of monarchy, it always comes back to the same question. If we don't have the royal family, who do we have instead? I mean, an elected head of state. Who would that be? Tony Blair?
Nicola Sturgeon.
Well, I mean, an independent Scot. I mean, this is the other thing. The monarchy's going nowhere as long as Scotland is part of the United Kingdom. It's only a question if.
Well, yeah, but even on the question though of independence, so there's people, because when I was looking at all the polling, there is obviously the question of if Scotland was an independent country, would you favour the monarchy or an elected head of state, or you don't know? And I think 41%, the last poll, 41% said they would keep the monarchy, 40% said elected head of state, and the rest of them said they don't know. So it's quite interesting, isn't it? The sort of, there's not necessarily that connection between independence and being anti-monarchy.
No.
You know?
No, so, true. Well, that, I mean, that was the SNP's. Well, that is the SNP's position. Alex Salmond's position, although he seems to have forgotten that he was the monarchy's biggest fan in Scotland.
No. Yeah, he was. I remember actually Paul, when he was at the Sunday Herald, did quite a few stories on the correspondence between him and Prince Charles at the time.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things I did actually, a point that I did want to make, right? See, you know, you're talking about the royal family and the Queen was very neutral, and Charles, we know Charles's views, right? I think that's a fair point. There's no point in him now pretending that he doesn't have any opinions. But so I was watching that documentary about Boris and Lord Lebedev. Evgeny Lebedev. And it was saying how there was all these concerns about him going into the House of Lords, and the security services were so concerned about it that I think they took this sort of unprecedented step of actually trying to appeal to the Queen to get him, to get her to block the, the entry into the House of Lords. And she, even though there was like all this massive, you know, national security issues, she said, no, I'm not getting involved. So when you look at that, obviously the Queen has got a history of not getting involved in anything. So you can say, well, that's fair enough. But when you've got somebody like Charles who's expressing opinions and getting involved in certain issues, then I fear that he might be then expected to get involved in other more serious issues, and he would open himself up to criticism if he didn't. Does that make sense?
Totally. So, it's a fine line that you have to walk on that. And I'm not sure what that line is for him. Let's just move on to the SNP and their latest brilliant week. The Westminster group, Mary Black, the deputy leader at Westminster, announced she would be standing down at the next general election. And then that was followed by a pretty ugly spat between the SNP MP Angus McNeill and the chief whip Brendan O'Hara, which led to Angus McNeill getting a temporary suspension. So Hannah, I've said many times you used to do the Westminster beat for the Herald. You know many people. What's your assessment of the latest round in this civil war?
Well, Angus McNeill is a well-known agitator. So I think it's not surprising. And, you know, he's not the sort of SNP establishment. He's not the biggest fan. He was always very outspoken. He has been outspoken about, you know, the stuff going on with Nicola Sturgeon. He called for her to be suspended while all the, you know, after she was arrested and then obviously released. So it's not surprising that he would be sort of agitating again. And Brendan O'Hara, he can be, you know, he can be a bit, he's not shy of conflict as well. So I don't know. I don't know what the... what he's kind of seeking to gain from this. It could just be capitalising on the fact that Mary Black has decided that she's not going to stand again, and he thinks, oh, it's a good time to kind of noise up the party in general. I don't really know what his aims are, really. I don't think he's a big fan of Stephen Flynn. But yeah, Mary Black, I'm much more interested in what she had to say. You know, Westminster... I could relate a lot to some of the things she was saying about toxicity and about the place in terms of how it operates. So nothing like, you know, take the politics out of it. It's a very, you know, claustrophobic environment. It's very unfamiliar. Like the way things work is just completely backwards. And I imagine for someone like Mary Black, you know, she was elected at the age of 20. She came down, she was very sort of gung-ho and quite, you know, full of energy and a bit of a sort of, you know, she was quite rebellious and things like that. And I imagine in her head when she got elected, she would want to come down and sort of shake things up and make a difference and try and, you know, change things. And I think that she has probably felt really stifled in Westminster because you just can't come in, you know, you can't come in and start ripping up the rule book. It really doesn't work like that. I mean, we've seen what happened to Boris when he obviously tried to bend the rules and change the rules and do things. You know, it's very frowned upon. And I think she's probably felt quite stifled by just the whole thing.
That she sees a life outside of elected politics, Hannah, or do you suspect that she's maybe got an eye on Holyrood at the next election?
To be honest, no. I think this is just my personal, I don't have any inside information. I don't think that she would go back into politics. But we don't know because she might, I think she needs a break from it, basically. By the time the next Holyrood election comes, she might change her mind. But I cannot see her going back into politics, frontline politics straight away. I think she might be kind of slightly disillusioned by the whole thing. But it's a shame, I think, because she's really talented. She's good at galvanising people and grabbing attention from the public, you know, with the way that she speaks and, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think she is a very good, you know, speaker and she does say things, you know, quite bluntly, but in a way that makes sense and she gets people talking about it. So it's a shame, I think, because she was a good sort of young politician in Scotland. So
Ben, I mean, the Westminster group is divided, the Holyrood group is divided, the Yes movement is divided. The implosion of the SNP is quite a thing to watch over the last few months. How much do you think is caused by the fact that they realise that they've lost their way on independence and the thing that they're in politics to achieve is simply not going to happen in the short and medium term. And in that vacuum, they've decided to turn on themselves.
I think you've summed it up perfectly, Paul. That's exactly what's happened. You know, they're a one-issue party, and if that one issue is now so far out of sight as to be unobtainable, what's left? Nothing. You know, straws in the wind. I think the other factor in all this is there's quite a few people looking ahead at the next election and worrying what's going to happen to their seat. I mean, Angus McNeill's won. Your former colleague, Torquil Crichton, looks like an excellent candidate for Labour in the Western Isles. I think most people would expect that he'll probably take that seat for Labour. It's always been a decent Labour stronghold. Angus McNeill's had it for years and years. And the one issue that, you know, is absolutely burning out there are the ferries. And Angus Brendan never mentions them. I mean, he's got some crackpot idea about using Qatari money to build tunnels between the islands. But he never wades in on the CalMac issue. He never comes forward and says, you know, the Scottish government needs to get a grip of this company that they own.
He has been seems to over them on the fishing side of things, isn't he?
He has on the fishing, yeah, true. I mean, I guess you can't. It's just so unpopular. I just think that as well as the fact that independence now looks, you know, a distant prospect, it's the much more short-term prospect that's now looming large is the next general election. And clearly there's some MPs who've thought, I'm going to jump before I lose my seat. And fair play to them because they give up their loss of office payment. I think there's quite a few SNP MPs who know full well they're going to lose their seat and will just coast into next September, next October, whenever it is, and then pick up their, I think it's twice the statutory redundancy rate. So anyone who goes now, hats off to them because they're saving the public purse a few quid.
I just remember the run-up to the 2014 independence referendum and how disciplined and united the SNP was. They'd got the referendum, they thought they could secure independence, and when you've got your eye on a prize like that, it does sort of foster a sense of discipline. Now it's completely slipped from the radar. No one knows what the strategy is. No one accepts that independence is going to happen in the next 5 years. It's simply not. And so they are just, they're turning on each other, and I really can't see it getting any better. And just on that theme, Hannah, the latest opinion polls, again, looking good for Scottish Labour, certainly at Westminster level. You know, if it was translated into seats tomorrow in a general election, Labour would be a couple behind the SNP, and I think they'd be poised for power at Holyrood as well. So happy days for Sarwar as things stand.
Well, currently, yes. I mean, there's a poll that came out today. However, I noticed there's been a little bit of kind of concern among some of the other pollsters about the accuracy of this individual polling organisation. I think it's quite a kind of new organisation, and it seems to have sort of quite outlying results for some of the cases. But today I think they've kind of reported that a sort of very good result for Labour. But I think, you know, regardless of the individual minutiae of the polls, I think it's obvious to almost everyone that Labour is going to do much better than they have been doing in Scotland. But that is only if, and I say this every time, that is only if they just keep ploughing on, don't do anything stupid, and, you know, just keep doing what they're doing. However, Keir Starmer today, you know, I think we're probably going to talk about this a little bit more, but Keir Starmer today appears to be, I don't know if he's maybe not had his coffee or what is going on, but he is now not committing to universal free school meals, which is bonkers, in my opinion, but also the two-child benefit cap, which, you know, led to the so-called rape clause, which is so controversial and despised by almost everyone up and down the country. He's saying that Labour may not get rid of that. You know, so it's these kind of things that they can't take any sort of victory for granted. And if they start fannying about, for want of a better word, with these sort of things that you would think, oh, that's a no-brainer, Labour will get rid of this and that. If they start messing about with it and going back and on stuff, they're going to turn away their core voters and, you know, it's going to end up in a mess.
I mean, I'm flabbergasted by that two-child policy. I mean, just to go back, that was introduced by, I think, the Cameron Osborne government. It relates to various means-tested benefits for low-income families. And it does, as you say, lead to the rape clause, where if a woman has been raped and wants benefits for, I think, a third child, she has to prove that she's been raped, which is just a horrendous thing. So I have no idea why Labour would get themselves in a position where they would essentially back what was a nasty, horrible Conservative policy. Ben, what are your thoughts on this?
On the rape clause or on Labour's chances?
Starmer basically, it's come out today that Labour would probably keep the two-child limit on certain benefits.
I mean, I think we've got to be careful with too much kind of emotive language around this. I don't think he's mentioned the rape clause itself, the two-child limit, as a policy. If you can find a way to kind of remove this kind of thing that affects, you know, a terrible thing that affects a small number of women, if you can take that out of it, the two-child policy is in itself, you know, a perfectly defendable policy on the use of public money. I think Keir Starmer probably recognises that to win an election, and I mean, this is what's going to put him in difficulty in Scotland, because up here there is an alternative for people. If you're minded to vote Labour, that there is an alternative in the SNP, and now that independence is off the table, if you're slightly left of centre, you can vote SNP safe in the knowledge that you know the UK is safe, and you're not voting Tory. Obviously, there's the Lib Dems as well, but I think down in England, to win an election, Keir Starmer needs to take votes from the Conservatives, and he's got to.
How can you defend a two-child limit and also say that you're pro-family? Surely, having children is a good thing. Bringing kids into the world is a good thing. Supporting children is a good thing. And then just an arbitrary limit on two kids. I mean, how is that justifiable?
Well, I don't think you can say having children is a good thing.
Well, okay. That's, I mean, yeah, generally, it is a good thing. It's good for society. You need to have a new generation of taxpayers.
Yeah, but it's not like...
It's because the whole, you know, there isn't an unlimited pot of money.
We can't
just spend the Treasury's reserves on unlimited benefits. There has to be a cutoff. I mean, what do you do? Increase it to three kids? Two kids is the national average. I think is it 2.4 children? I'm sure there's a sitcom of that name. That is,
I mean, you see, there's, you know, there has to be limits. Of course, there's always limits in the benefit system, but you know, the previous Prime Minister found money to cut the top rate of tax, I think, from 45 to 40p. I mean, Cameron and Osborne, when they introduced the two-child limit, they also doled out inheritance tax breaks.
Well, exactly. And also, if you look at all the wastage, you know, the amount of fraud during the COVID pandemic, the amount of money that's given out in crony contracts, you know, the money that's wasted on countless things, you know, that bloody Boris Bridge that was clearly pie-in-the-sky idea, and it cost, you know, millions to actually, for somebody to create a report that says this is a nonsense idea. I mean, if you cut all that nonsense and crap out of the way and actually put the money into policies that benefit normal working people, then you might be able to have a benefit cap that was for more than two children, and women who are, you know, raped don't have to go and show some faceless person in a benefits office that they've been raped to get benefits for their third child. I mean, it's disgraceful.
The Tory government always seems to find money to shove in the pockets of their own supporters, funded by people at the bottom on means-tested benefits. That's the way this government has functioned since 2010, Ben.
Well, exactly. And the government has functioned since 2010 and won, what, three elections? Keir Starmer and, you know, I'm not saying that I want this outcome to happen, but if Keir Starmer wants to be Prime Minister, he has to win a general election. And to win a general election, he needs policies that appeal to the most number of people. And no matter how much people may criticise and, you know, whatever the rights and wrongs of what the Tories have done, they have won three general elections in a row. So it can't be that wrong.
I think, well, it's four, actually. But
sorry, four in a row.
Yeah, I think, though, two of those are probably because Jeremy Corbyn was in charge, right?
Very possibly. Very possibly. But then, you know, Keir Starmer needs to show that he's not Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, well, obviously.
And again, you know, he's only floating this idea. Let's see what he does with the two-child benefit cap.
Specifically, Angela Rayner has been very, very vocal about her growing up on free school meals. She was a free school meals kid, etc. And now, and they've been really supportive of the Sunday Meals campaign for universal free school meals. But yet today, I think I read that he is now sort of backtracking or saying, you know, he can't commit to bringing in the sort of scale of free school meals that they had been discussing before. I don't know what your views are on free school meals, Ben, but I just think there's a bit too many, you know, with this benefits policy and then the free school meal stuff. I just think they really risk sort of isolating their kind of core voters in a way.
Yeah, I mean, just again, obviously, we're to sort of come back to the Scottish angle. This is something that's devolved. So Keir Starmer can say, right, every school kid in the country has to pay 20 quid for the lunch from now on. And it won't affect Scottish schools. So,
yeah,
in a way, this is a policy that's, I think probably Wales is the same. This is an English policy. It's for English voters. If they like the idea of saving a bit of cash and not funding, you know, wealthy kids in the home counties to go and get fish fingers, chips and beans every day, then perhaps there are other things that can be that this money can be spent on. Or perhaps it can go to some of the traditional Labour constituencies in the north and in the inner cities and in Wales and in Scotland, and, you know, actually start doing some targeted good rather than just spraying it around every kid in the country. I don't know. And as I say, it doesn't affect Scotland. The Scottish government is in charge lock, stock and barrel of our overcrowded, underperforming schools. And, Keir Starmer's policy is kind of irrelevant up here.
Well, yeah, it is. But my point about it was, you know, if he starts throwing around these sorts of things,
it's going to give
the impression that, oh, this isn't actually Labour. And even though, like, individual things like the school meal policy, yes, it's not applicable in Scotland, but it's still going to filter through to voters here who think.
It is, yeah. I think the biggest danger of this for Labour is in Scotland, because it's clearly a policy designed to win over soft Tory voters in England. And it's just going to turn off Labour voters in Scotland or SNP voters in Scotland who are maybe thinking, do you know what, I might give Labour another try. And then they see stuff like this and they think, I'm going to stick with the SNP because... So, you know, it's a tricky job. He's got to appeal to... the whole of the United Kingdom, and it's, you know, we're a very diverse country. Voters in different places look for different things. They have different priorities. It's hard for Keir Starmer to, or Rishi Sunak for that matter, to appeal to everyone. You know, this is, in a way, this is good that we've got shows like this that can remind people in Scotland that it doesn't matter what Keir Starmer says about school meals. It's a Scottish Government decision.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Good week, bad week, starting with you, Hannah.
Oh, my bad week, yes, is just the general place that is Westminster. You know, we've had Mary Black being very honest and quite brutal about the place and how it operates. We've had Chris Pincher, who has been... well, he's not been sanctioned yet, but he's been found, you know, to have been pinching people, you know, kind of sleazy behaviour by Chris Pincher. And then we've had, you know, there's some chat as well earlier on in the week. The BBC did a good piece of work as well with some former staffers in Westminster who have been talking about kind of sleaze and inappropriate behaviour. And I just think, you know, all these things combined, it's just leaves Westminster feeling a bit yuck, basically. So that's my bad week, is just the institution of Westminster. And my good week is a bit of a sarcastic good week, but it's Lorna Slater, because for a change...
because Parliament is not sitting.
Well, yeah, essentially, yeah. Parliament is not sitting. She's not been, you know, called to give up her job this week, like she has been for the past 4, 5, 6 weeks. And instead, it's actually Patrick Harvey who's getting all the dogs abuse for the Green Party. So that's my alternative good week, is Lorna Slater.
Well done, Lorna. You finally received some praise from Planet Holyrood. Ben, how about you? Good week, bad week?
Good week, Mary Black. I think... you know, she's clearly a very intelligent woman. She's recognised the direction of travel, even though her seat's probably one of the safer. You know, it's very much mid-table in terms of the Labour target seats in Scotland. Certainly winnable, but, you know, she had a good chance of defending it. But, she, you know, fair play to her. Like I said before, she's recognised the direction and she's jumped from the sinking ship. Not sure Stephen Flynn will be so happy appointing her as deputy, and 6 months later she's announced she's leaving. Next steps, who knows?
Thanks for the job. I'm off.
I'm a celebrity. Kezia Dugdale did it. I think Mary Black's got a big future. I think she's recognised across the UK. She has jumped beyond the boundaries of Scottish politics, and people across the country know her. I can see her on politics shows. I can see her having a career in the media. Alternatively, is it Mary Black v Kate Forbes for the next leader of the opposition after the next Holyrood elections? Who knows? But anyway, I think she's got out while the getting's good.
And can you see her?
She's quite a smart cookie.
Can you see her going on Strictly, Ben?
I could. I absolutely could. Yeah, yeah. That's a good shout. I mean,
I'd actually watch Strictly if Mary Black was on it.
Could you imagine?
I could imagine, yeah.
The suits are kind of already a bit Strictly, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I honestly, I think she's, you know, she's got that kind of X factor that will take her beyond whether, I mean, I don't agree with a word she says, but.
Daily Express backs Mary Black for Strictly.
For Strictly.
And who's your bad week, Ben?
Bad week, kind of the other side of Hannah's coin, it's Patrick Harvey.
You love this guy. You love Patrick, don't you?
While, republicanism and you know, being an anti-monarchist, it's a perfectly respectable, widely held view. I think he will have been very, very, very disappointed by the turnout at his rally. Clyde Radio, we weren't there, but Clyde Radio had a reporter there who counted 50 people. I think the Press Association later suggested it was 100. Either way, 50 to 100 people to hear Patrick Harvey lambast the monarchy. I think he'll be disappointed at that. I think it shows probably that he's very much a lone voice when it comes to this. This 40% of people who would rather have an elected head of state clearly don't care that much that they actually want to go and make their voices heard. I think it's a shrug of the shoulders rather than anything else. So a bad week for Patrick Harvey.
One thing you can never accuse this programme of is ignoring the Scottish Greens. We always cover them every week. They may not like the commentary, but at least they are discussed and talked about. So I think that brings the latest edition to a close. Thanks to the guests, Hannah Roger and Ben Borland, for joining us again. I'm not sure when the next Planet Holyrood is going to take place. That's still to be discussed. But whenever it happens, we hope that you join us. So thanks again.
Think of it's important we look at the facts.
Yeah. Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.